Morning, everybody. Welcome to the Portland City Council. Before we begin the official proceedings of the council, we do something each Wednesday morning, and that is to ask a question of the folks in this room and at home. And the question is, how are the children? And the reason we ask that is we know that when the children in a community are well, the community itself is well. And so this morning, we asked a young person to come in and talk with us. And so what I would like to do is to have Jacob Wintron please come up. Jacob, you look very nice in your Boy Scout uniform.
Thank you.
Can you tell me what the badges are for on your sash?
They're a merit badge.
Uh-huh.
And I completed all of them.
Good.
And,
well, you know, I read some of your background, and it said that you recently collected over 12,000 books.
13,000.
13,000. And delivered them to different charities.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. How old are you, Jacob?
13.
13. And 13,000. Well, of course, I guess that figures, doesn't it? Well, I'm very, very proud of you for doing that. But I know you're here to talk to us this morning, so why don't you go ahead and tell us what you would like us to know.
Hi, my name is Jacob Wittren, and I am 13 years old. I am in 7th grade at Round Russell Middle School in Southeast Portland. I have never missed a day of school since preschool. I also attend Boy Scout 2.08, the coolest troop in Portland. I am a first-class rank working on my star rank. The secretary here sent me some basic questions, only if I wanted to use them, so I decided to use her questions, so here it is. I wrote lots of speeches for this and couldn't decide on the right one, so if it's okay with you, I would like to read a couple of paragraphs. How are the children doing today? I think the children doing today are doing okay, if they are on the right road. But they need a lot of support and love and encouragement to be on the right road. I am a kid and I am doing great. I am surrounded by support and encouragement from my family, church, school, and scout leaders. Where do you live and what is your neighborhood like? I live in Southeast Portland in a house my parents are buying. We live next to a city park. My neighbors and I would like more police near the park. The park at times is not safe. There's a lot of mean kids out there, and they don't respect other spaces. What would make your schools and neighborhood safer? If everyone follows rules and just be respectful to other spaces and more security, what would make your school more successful? I think my school is a successful school, and it has a good security system there, too. But there is a lot of bullying there. I think the kids could learn better if they knew they were safe at all times. School could be a scary place for kids in order for us kids to feel safe and good about ourselves. We need a caring school that has protection. We need after-school activities to do that are staffed with caring people that will encourage us kids. Just remember, teachers, staff, leaders, please, what you teach us today. Because one day us kids will be adults in the community. We will be the future doctors, bus drivers, and mayor, and some criminals. But if your adults continue to support us, the future will be filled with more happiness and not full of bullies. What would you like the mayor to know about you? I love school and church and scouts. I like doing community service. I have in the past cleaned an old lady's yard up with help from others, and that took a couple months to do. And I put together a teddy bear drive for foster kids. I put together a school supply kids clothing drive for my school, and I help with Adopt the Soldier program. I have, for the last 2 years, been collecting used and new books and delivering them to different charities around Portland. I have been the top collector both years. This year, the total amount donated was $13,005. And last year, I got a certificate signed by the President Bush. And this year, I'll get the same thing. Everything is all good.
Well, Jacob, for your age, you're a very wise person. Thank you. Let's
give
Jacob a hand. Thank you for being here, Jacob. Yes, he was, wasn't he? And this is Jacob's family in the second row back there, and some friends from a friend from the Boy Scouts organization. So, Jacob, I know this is spring break, and thank you for getting up early and coming down to City Hall to talk to us. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
April? Is April here? Do we have someone? Okay. Could you please come forward? We have with us today a group of students from Grant High School. They belong to the REAP program, which is Reaching and Empowering All People. And I happen to know this young lady's name is Liz. Mm-hmm. And what's your last name, Liz?
Walker.
Walker. Could you just take a few minutes and tell us a little bit about REAP and what the Grant High School program does? And Franklin and David Douglas?
Students here today.
Oh. Okay.
Well, I attend Grant, and I'm a sophomore, and I'm part of the REAP program, and basically we have a Black Studies class, and we talk about, like, current issues, and we get, like, outside support of that, just that class. Like, it goes outside of school and everything. We have, like, tutorial where, which is after school, where it's, like, homework help, and you get help on all your homework, and we have teachers that come down there. And it's for an hour and a half on Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. And basically, the program has helped me a lot because most of the teachers I felt didn't care. And since Mr. Jackson and Mr. Childs have worked in the class, my grades are coming up, and it's helped me out a lot. And I want to thank you guys. Potter and
Dan Salson
for funding the program,
helping.
And, yeah.
Good. Well, thank you, Liz. Could we have all of the REAP students stand up? Let's give these young folks a hand for the good work they've done. Thanks for speaking with us today, Liz. City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Sten?
Here.
Potter?
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which entity he or she is authorized to represent. Please read the communication.
Item 297, request of John Patrick Litke to address Council regarding bikes not being allowed on any sidewalks.
Could you come forward, sir?
There.
Yes, please.
Shall I begin or wait for you to say?
Well, I'll thank you for being here.
Thank you.
If you would please, when you speak,
yes.
State your name for the record.
John Patrick Litke.
And you have 3 minutes, sir.
Okay, I'll be quick. Thank you.
Thank you.
I used to be a Boy Scout, but I made it to Tenderfoot, and they kicked me out because it rained in my tent, and I left. Anyway, since then, I moved to California, where I eventually became county supervisor. I was the hippie supervisor in Santa Cruz. You may have read about it. But on the board, we wrote the book on bicycle paths, lanes, and trails, long before Portland had paved street and sliced bread, I imagine. And we kept all of these things off of the sidewalks for a reason. The pedestrians, it's a sidewalk. I've been hit 3 times by bicycles, one of which resulted in a heart attack 2 weeks ago, and I went to the hospital. I'm a veteran, and I went to the VA hospital. I used to ride a bicycle. I can't anymore because of strokes and things. It's for sale. If anyone's interested, I'll give you my card later. But anyway, I went to the police department. I called the city hall, the City Councilman Adams' office and the young man there, whose name I forget, Gonzalez or something. No, it wasn't Gonzalez. No, it wouldn't be him.
Severo.
But anyway, who, Gutierrez?
Severo, yes. Gonzalez.
Okay. Anyway, he said that there is a law against the bicycles on the sidewalks already, and it's the police department has to take care of it. I went down to the police department, and I was hit by a bicycle on the way. I was just crossing the street from the, you know, where the bikes go along the river there. And when I try to walk along the river there, they come whizzing by like they own the road, both towards you and away, you know, from the rear and from the front. And I yell at them, bicycles, no bikes on the sidewalks. And they yell back things at me I can't say because of the Boy Scouts here. And I won't even rhyme say them. Anyway, they said some bad things. And so...
These are bicyclists on the bridge sidewalks or on other sidewalks?
The sidewalk right next to the river, what's that street?
Well, the Esplanade.
Is that what you call it?
Yeah. The Esplanade bikes are allowed.
Well, the thing is, I was hit there, but also on the streets of downtown Portland.
Got it.
You see, and I yell back at them, that's against the law, and they yell back some other funny thing. And I'm going to carry a sign with the ordinance number. Because I yell back, you could wind up in jail. That's against the law. Plus, it causes, I've seen people get hit. I've seen people with strollers almost get hit. I don't get it, you know. But here's the thing. I went to the police department to try to report it. You know what happened? They said, well, we don't take that information here. You have to call in. Here's the number. I said, you see a telephone on me? And I said, well, there's a white courtesy phone on the wall. And they gave me the number. And I call them. Oh, well, we can't take your information right now. Give us your name and number. We'll call back within 4 days. Well, it's a good thing I wasn't reporting a bank robbery, you know. And so what I'm trying to emphasize, if you're going to allow bicycles on the sidewalk, paint the lines where they're supposed to stay in. Because otherwise, it's a free-for-all. It really is. And I'm not against bicycles. I used to have one, but I can't ride them anymore, like I said, because of my health. And I moved to Portland 12 years ago after I got out of federal prison for nonviolently protesting against the first Gulf War.
So if I could just clarify, so...
Yes, sir.
When you called the non-emergency line to report that you'd been hit by a bike.
Yes. Nobody even answered. They said, call back within 4 days because nobody's here to take your call. How about that?
The non-emergency line at the police bureau?
I went into the police building over here on whatever it is, Madison, and right around the corner.
I have your information. Is it Litke?
Litke, correct.
I will... have the chief. I'll give this information to the chief.
Thank you.
We'll look into it. We'll get
Thank
back
you.
To you. Thank you, sir.
Very good. Is that it?
Yes, sir.
Thank
well,
you. I didn't vote for any of you. I hope you don't hold that against me. But
not until now.
We'll get back to you in about 4 months.
Oh, okay. Well, I hope I'm still here and still registered. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. God bless the Boy Scouts, too. All right. Very good.
That was the only communication, correct? Okay. Do any of the commissioners have any items to pull off the consent agenda?
I do. I've had a request to pull item. I'm sorry. What is it?
310.
And I have notified in advance the clerk. Item 310.
Okay. We'll hear 310 at the regular agenda. Any other? Any member of this citizen group wish to pull any item from the consent agenda? Hearing none, please call the roll.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Move to the 9:30 time certain. Please read the 9:30 time certain.
Item 298, replace the business license law chapter of the Portland City Code.
Commissioner Adams?
Thank you, Mayor Potter. First of all, I'd like to report back to council about the venture capital BLF exemption issue that came up as part of the discussion and approval of the resolution that directed the authoring and consideration of the ordinance before us today. It will be an administrative code change, likely, that does not require council action. But we have a group together that includes the staff of the Bureau of Revenue, folks in the venture capital, business of venture capital, and we are hoping to complete an option for consideration by stakeholders in the next few weeks. That's one update. The second update, I'm pleased to report that my office, Warren Jimenez, and I've been over to visit with the county board myself, are working to make similar changes that we made in terms of reducing the burden on small businesses of the business income tax. That county steering committee is chaired by Commissioner Jeff Kogan. The code changes in this ordinance we have before us today increases the BLF gross receipts deductions from $25,000 to $50,000 and increases the owner's compensation deduction from $60,000 to $80,000. And as I did before, but I can never reiterate enough, I want to thank Sue Klobertantz, Shane. Where's Shane? Is somewhere in here? There's Shane. What's that?
I said he moved.
He moved. Shane Abna from the city attorney's office and the very smart and talented Terry Williams, who knows this issue far better than any human being should.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Mayor and Council, my name is Sue Klobertantz. I'm Director for the Revenue Bureau. And because Sam really just outlined the great deal of work that's been going on, I will keep my remarks very short. As you know, the ordinance you have before you is a result of a very long process, and you've received considerable testimony on the what we call BLF reform pieces of that. I won't, and as Commissioner Adams just summarized, the two main items of that is the increase in the gross receipts exemption to $50,000, and what we call the owner's comp allowance deduction is raised to $80,000. In addition to those items, the ordinance you have before you today also has a number of housekeeping items that the Revenue Bureau has been working with the city attorneys on for a number of months. Those housekeeping items are not substantive in their changes. They are technical clarifications of gray or confusing areas or changes that need to be made to keep us consistent with the federal tax terminology. Those changes do allow us some increased ability to assess and collect past due accounts and also sharing of information between bureaus so that in our experience, if a business owes one bureau, they probably owe another bureau. And the new language will allow us to compare data so that we might better and more efficiently collect the city revenues. And one last item is the ordinance before you does add two new penalties, one for computer hacking. We're not aware that we have had any problem, but this language would just allow us to deal with that should that happen. And then the other penalty is for frivolous filing. That takes a great deal of staff time when someone refuses to file based on their civil rights or what have you. And so this gives us some penalties should that happen. Let me just stop there because we've had so much discussion and testimony on these items. And as Sam indicated, I really need to thank Shane and Terry and also Scott Carter, who is our revenue audit supervisor in the Revenue Bureau, for all of their hard work. And as the young gentleman just said earlier, I think all is good.
Mm-hmm. So I know you sent me a memo on this, mm-hmm. and Commissioner Adams just referenced it, but could you outline in a little bit of detail the process by which we will get to doing something for venture capital investment funds? Mm-hmm. We heard a lot of compelling testimony that they've all moved because of the our BLF, and these are the types of businesses that we want to have, I think, in Portland, because they do fund so many of our emerging businesses and industries.
Terry Williams, License and Tax Division Manager. Yes, we've had an initial meeting where we've had CPAs, attorneys, venture capital firms, and City of Portland representatives there to talk about the overall issues, what are the beginnings of what does a venture capitalist look like versus what does a mutual fund look like versus other partnerships, to try to understand the nuances. And then where we go and how we draw the appropriate line. So it takes a little bit of time to understand and ensure that we do the right line drawing, if you will, to make sure that we don't over-exempt or take out more than what we really want to do. There's some homework assignments as a result of that to make sure that we have adequate information. I believe that what we'll probably end up doing is looking to an administrative rule, because that would encompass both the city and the county. And I would expect that we will draw it very similarly to how mutual funds have a deduction, and we will probably look to try to create something similar to that as a part of this rule. But we need to understand all the nuances and make sure we create it just right, and so that takes a little bit of time.
So I read in the memo that you're all on hiatus because it's the tax season.
Tax season,
which makes sense. So, but can you give us a rough timeline when you would expect this group to reach a conclusion or a recommendation?
We didn't actually set the next meeting, but I would expect it to be around the beginning of May. We'd probably have another meeting or two, draft an administrative rule, and then the Revenue Bureau would hold public hearings on that rule, and then would be able to adopt it following that. So between a 10 and 30-day notice before the public hearing when we got to that. So I would expect it to happen within 2 to 3 months.
And you don't need anything in the authorizing ordinance, then? It can be done by administrative rule?
We have you've already authorized through this code for us to adopt administrative rules, so it would come under that authority.
It would be my intention, though, to bring it back to council just so counts as a report,
okay,
so that council has the ability to comment on it and the public has the ability to comment as well. Everyone on council, Commissioner Stinn and others, have expressed concern about this. So,
okay. Thanks.
Other questions? Thank you, folks. Anybody signed up to testify on this?
Yes, we have one person signed up, Judy Crane.
Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
When you speak, please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Okay. My name is Judy Crane. I operate Holman's Bar and Grill over on 28th and East Burnside. I serve on the Small Business Advisory Council, where I chair the Cost of Doing Business Committee. And the reason that I am here is to, number one, thank you for passing this action, and to say that our committee has spent several sessions with Sue and Scott Carter looking at this issue, and spent a lot of time looking at what it is that they're proposing, the changes and the resulting ordinance. And I'm here to tell you that the Small Business Advisory Council unanimously supports the changes that Sue is suggesting.
Thank you.
Appreciate
it.
Thank you very much. Is that it?
That's all signed up.
Any further discussion? It's a non-emergency and moves to a second reading. When will it be heard?
I'm sorry, April 4th.
April 4th. At what time?
It'll be on the 9:30 regular agenda.
The next one is at 10:15, so let's move to the regular agenda. You pulled item 310 from the regular agenda, Commissioner?
Yes.
Could you read 310?
Direct city auditor to make entries in city lien docket to reflect the obligations under security substitution program and North McAdam investors funding obligation.
Thank you. I had a request from a citizen to pull this to be discussed. So I appreciate any information you can give to explain precisely what this accomplishes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. I'm Eric Johansson, the debt manager in the Office of Management and Finance. The ordinance in front of you today is necessary to allow the auditor's office to bill for payments that are due under notes and trust deeds that are resulting from the security substitution program the council approved in September of last year. As you may recall, the security substitution program was authorized by council to allow property owners in the tram and Gibbs streetcar LID to essentially move LID obligations from one property within the LID to another. The request for this ability was initiated by North McAdam Investors in the Eighth Amendment negotiations. However, a notice was provided to all property owners within the LIDs, notifying them of the availability of the program and giving them the opportunity to participate. We sent that notice out in the end of November, and I took several phone calls and emails from citizens, but the only ones who elected to participate was NMI. Again, this program was available to everyone, but the only assessed property owner that took advantage was NMI. The ordinance itself simply directs the auditor to make entries in the city's lien dockets for the recorded trust deeds for the LID obligations, as well as for the $2.5 million obligation that NMI entered into to provide additional funding to the tram. So essentially all this particular ordinance does is accommodates the ability to bill the payments that are due under these trust deeds. If we don't have that ability to do it, we have to find some alternative mechanism to make to do the billings to NMI in this case for both the LID trust deeds as well as for the $2.5 million obligation. So this is, in my mind, very much an administrative item that follows as part of the security substitution program.
So the $2.5 million that is going to be leaned, that is the charge to NMI for the increased cost of the construction of the tram?
Correct. That was part of the negotiation was that NMI was putting in the additional $2.5. They elected to pay that over time. We've entered into a trust deed and note with NMI for that obligation, and they're currently paying under that particular note.
And if they're doing that, where are we leaning the property?
In order to protect our interest in the property.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
Is anybody wanted to testify on this?
I think I'm not sure if anybody wanted to testify or not.
We had one person sign up.
Okay. Thank you.
Amanda Fritz.
Good morning. I'm Amanda Fritz, speaking only for myself. Thank you for pulling this item. And my first question is, what was the purpose of requiring an ordinance to allow these administrative changes in the first place? If it's a fairly routine thing, why have it on the agenda? The second question I have is, would this item be on the agenda if the proposed form of government is changed? If there's a value to having it on the agenda, my understanding is that it wouldn't be on the agenda under a more administrative form of government. And that's a question that I have. The third question that I have is why allow deferred payments when we need the tram to be paid off? And the fourth request that I have is that when you, as city commissioners, have items on the agenda, it's really difficult for citizens to find out what they mean. And I had assumed that you would have received a briefing on every item on the agenda. I have a blog, amandafritz.com, where I preview the city council's agenda every week on Friday or Saturday. It takes me 2 to 3 hours to figure out or to try to find information about items on the agenda so that I can explain to citizens who might be interested, you know, what they mean. And it seems to me it wouldn't take very much time. The staff are already preparing these items for your attention, to have links on the agenda, or even on the front page of Portland Online. There is a section on Portland Online that's called New Policies Issues. It's never, since I've been doing Next Up at City Council on my blog, it's never had any of the issues that are coming up on the following Wednesday. And it's really difficult for both citizens and for you as commissioners to find out what these items on the agenda mean. And it seems to me that one very simple thing that we could do without changing the entire form of government would be to make this information available. I'm sure that the staff are already preparing their reports on a computer, and it takes very little time to set up a web page or to post a paragraph that would explain to citizens, you know, what does this mean? Why are we doing it this way? And that way there'd be more confidence, there'd be more open government, and people would be accountable for the things that they are going through on the council agenda.
I agree with you. I think the form of government aside, that agenda items, I too have at times got home, didn't bring my material, went online to try to find some information about something I was interested in, and have a really hard time navigating, finding it. And so I think it is a good idea for us to discuss how to make our agenda available online, click it, and then whatever relevant information is at that link. And I think that's actually a good suggestion. I don't know that it's exactly relevant to this discussion, but on the broader issue of having information accessible and transparent, I think that's a really good point.
If I may, I think it is relevant to this discussion because people do care, particularly in South Waterfront, about the way tax dollars are spent, the way
exactly.
developers are assessed. And it sounds like that there is good rationale for this particular item on the agenda.
Right.
I don't have enough knowledge myself to know whether there is or not, but I know there are people in the community who care and who would have that information. If people knew that we were doing things properly, there'd be a lot more confidence that the next time something comes up, that they don't have to go back and double-check it. So if each one of you, when your bureaus put something on the agenda, could make sure, maybe even if it's not on the main page, if it's either on your commissioner page, or if it's on the Parks and Recreation page, or if it's on the official City Liens page, this item was not on.
Yeah.
This is the page that you can find out all about City Liens. It shouldn't be that hard.
No, it shouldn't. I agree.
Carla, do you have any...
Well, to let you know, the auditor's office is working on getting those items available online. It's, you know, we deal with a lot of items each week, and we certainly make that accessible. If you've had problems calling the auditor's office and couldn't get those items, you know, I'm sorry, but when we get them electronic from your offices, we make them available once we release the agenda. But I understand a weekend, you certainly can't get a hold of us, but we are trying to make that something. We are working on that electronically.
Oh, I appreciate that. And it takes me, as I say, 2 to 3 hours to look for the link. So I don't think it should be up to the auditor's office to ask everybody, please send me the information on your item. Mm-hmm. It should be readily, as I say, even if not posted with the agenda, which would be ideal, on your commissioner office's page or on your bureau's page.
Well, I think it's a great idea, but given this relatively modest staff that we have, I think that having the, except for those that were sponsoring out of our individual offices, I think that our bureaus, if given the electronic option to load it into your form, Carla, is doable.
You would be responsible for sending it to Carla rather than the auditor's office having to ask for everything, because
right.
Yes, that would take a lot of time.
That's what they do now. It is their responsibility
the
to send it to us.
But send it with the links so that you can post
right.
that
too. We don't certainly have links yet. Right.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Do you want him to answer the question?
Okay, please read item.
We have to vote. We have to vote
on
that.
One
we just talked about.
You want to vote on 310?
Okay.
Did we want Eric to answer her question?
Is that?
No one else signed up. That's right. Okay.
I heard two questions that I can respond to. Why is this ordinance coming forward? My understanding is that the auditor's office and the city attorney's office just wanted to be certain that the auditor had the authority to put these particular items onto the lien docket. So that's why it's coming forward. I do want to correct one thing that I heard in the previous testimony. There is no deferral of payment under this program. NMI, through the Security Substitution Program, is making payments on the LIDs on the exact same terms that all other assessed property owners in the LID will be making their payments. So.
Further questions? Thank you. Call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye.
Do 311.
Let's go to item 311.
Revised subpoena issued by City Council to Portland General Electric.
Sten?
I've got something to read.
Okay.
Thank you, Mayor Potter. In introducing this resolution, I'd like to make a couple of points. A year ago, the city sent a subpoena to PGE for certain records related to their business, focused particularly on tax decisions, relations with Enron, and participation in the wholesale electricity market during the California energy crisis. Our goal is, in general, to determine if PGE has been operated in the public interest and then to consider things the city might do to make sure PGE is operated to promote the public interest of our citizens in the future. PGE's reaction to the subpoena was to file a lawsuit challenging the city's fundamental right to issue the subpoena. PGE has claimed that the subpoena was unreasonably broad and costly to respond to. Finally, last week, through litigation discovery, we have learned some of why PGE thinks the subpoena is unreasonable and burdensome. Put most charitably, PGE interpreted the subpoena to be the broadest possible interpretation and did not bother to come back to the city to seek clarification or limitations prior to filing its lawsuit. For an example, PGE now tells us that it has saved all recycling from all PGE offices for 4 years. And it assumed we wanted to go through that page by page to find anything that might be relevant to our subpoena. To be very clear and on the record, we don't want PGE's recycling. We want to see PGE's records. And to be clear once more, not its recycling. The information the city seeks from PGE is very important, but it was never our purpose to impose unreasonable and unnecessary burdens on PGE in providing the information. Now we finally understand more of PGE's objections. We believe we can narrow the subpoena to address some of PGE's concerns while still getting the information the city needs. There is a trial in the PGE lawsuit next week, and we want to make sure this resolution to amend the subpoena is passed before the trial. We hope that this will allow the court to focus on the important issues in the case rather than spending its time on theoretical disputes about how much it will cost PGE to look through its recycling. Thank you.
Do we have public testimony?
I had a question maybe for, I guess I'm looking at Terry Thatcher. I'm assuming you're our litigator on this.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. I'm Terrence Thatcher. I'm a deputy city attorney, and I am working on the litigation related to the PGE subpoena. I note we have an executive session tomorrow to talk about litigation strategy, but I am here if I can to answer any questions. Commissioner Leonard has, I think, very well described the primary purpose of the resolution we're bringing for you today. It's a narrowing resolution. It is not a resolution to pull back the subpoena. It's merely to clarify the nature of the records the city wanted.
I guess my question, and if this is more appropriate for tomorrow's executive session, you can just tell me. There's a letter here from Dave Robertson at PGE stating that we've declined to participate in the Court of Appeals mediation program. Is that kind of a standard? I mean, I know mediation is pretty standard these days in most court proceedings.
Commissioner Saltzman, I would say that the actual decisions made on, let me rephrase this. Every party in litigation always says that it's tried to settle the case and the other party has resisted settlement. There have been discussions with PGE, and at greater length tomorrow we can talk about those if you wish. I will say that the issue of arbitration before the Court of Appeals came up when one very narrow issue, a legal issue, went up on appeal. That is to say, whether or not PGE could sue the city in what's called a writ of review or could sue the city in a standard declaratory judgment action. The judge said the city can't be sued for issuing a subpoena using this writ of review procedure. And that issue was appealed by PGE. When we were asked by the Court of Appeals whether or not mediation of that issue was useful or helpful, we basically said we have a clear legal issue here. The city isn't going to compromise on that legal point, nor is PGE, and determined not to enter that mediation process in the Court of Appeals.
Great, thanks.
Nor, it also said in direct negotiation, you also, the city chose not to directly negotiate with PGE about the conditions for the information?
Mr. Mayor, the city has had discussions with PGE. We have talked to PGE. They have made some proposals. The proposals were, I can describe in more detail tomorrow if you wish, in the view of the commissioners monitoring this litigation in the city attorney's office, not significant proposals that could advance actual settlement of the case. But we have talked to them, absolutely. We have not refused to talk. We have had several meetings with PGE in an effort to see if there is some way to settle the case short of litigation. So far, those discussions have not gotten us to a settlement.
So how does the resolution narrow the request? I've not had any briefing on this, neither has my staff, so I'm asking because I don't have the information to make a decision.
Okay. I did meet with Austin Raglione and John Desard to discuss this resolution last week, and if you have the material in front of you, Mr. Mayor, I could go through very quickly the kinds of things that we are proposing to do. If you look at the resolution, there are
When did you meet them last week?
I'm sorry.
When did you
meet them? It was Monday or Tuesday this week.
Of last week or this week?
Yesterday. The day before. Yes.
Okay.
I'm sorry. We met with other commissioners' staff last week and then were able to see Austin this week.
Okay, go ahead.
If you look at the resolution, attachment B is the original subpoena with a variety of things stricken and some things added. The first major additions and deletions are found on page 2 of attachment B. And the primary thing we did here, after consultation with Commissioner Stan and Leonard, was we made it very clear that we did not want PGE to go through their recycling boxes because we had not understood that that was one of the burdens we were placing on them. They've, as Commissioner Leonard said, they've saved every piece of recycling for the last 4 years, evidently as part of the Enron bankruptcy document hold. Once we learned that that was one of their concerns, it seemed unnecessary to go through all the recycling. We recognize that's a burden. We expect that a company like PGE that actually has been operating as a regulated utility for years has well-organized records, and we weren't asking them to go through their unorganized records. Similarly, we have taken out any implication that we wanted PGE to go through 35,000 backup tapes. Again, what we learned last week in discovery is that PGE has 35,000 computer backup tapes of all documents ever generated, drafts, what have you. Those two are not organized in any way. They're just saved and put in a warehouse out at Trojan. And PGE explained to us, finally, that that was going to cost them an immense amount of money and time to try and go through the backup tapes. And again, in consultation with the commissioners, we decided that what the city wanted was organized records, not undifferentiated computer tapes that just happened to be backed up. The city actually has these backup tapes as well. They're very difficult to access. And we are convinced, after talking to consultants and accountants, that the kind of the material that the city council wanted and asked for is in well-organized, cohesive files or computer records that can be accessible So again, we felt that we had asked for something, not understanding what they, how they would interpret the subpoena to mean that they had to go through 35,000 backup tapes. And we said, if that's what you think we mean, we don't mean that. The purpose behind that is to allow the court to address the issues before the court on fundamental issues of authority without, we hope, getting bogged down in disputes over the extreme burden that PGE claims is imposed on it. Bear in mind that PGE has challenged the city's right to issue this subpoena. It has claimed that it has no obligation to respond to this subpoena. It has said that as a legislative body, the city council cannot issue such a subpoena to PGE, and PGE has no obligation to respond. Those are the fundamental legal issues we hope the court can address if we eliminate some of these issues of millions of dollars of burden. On page four, and we eliminated a particular word that we don't want.
Which attachment are you on?
I'm on Exhibit B, Attachment B. On page four, we narrowed a request for tax returns. The words have been written, filed, or prepared. We really don't want every draft tax return that anybody ever put together. We're looking for what was filed, and when they brought that to our attention, we said we can change that for you too. Substantial change on page five. We have eliminated some specific requests for emails because they are difficult to acquire and because we think we can gain the information through our more general requests for information on Multnomah County tax records and other information related to the tax. So we thought, again, we thought that was actually a redundancy to ask for specific emails from specific people. And finally, starting on page seven, we eliminated a whole raft of specific requests that, quite frankly, we believe are redundant to our more general requests. In this case, it was merely a clarification. On page seven, starting on page seven, a subpoena asked for documents related to specific tax decisions. And we determined that those documents should be made available to the city under the more general request under the subpoena. And we did not want to make it seem that we were asking twice or we were asking for something that might be something more than what PGE even had in its records. So the items on page 7 and 8 were eliminated primarily because they were redundant, and we believe that in good faith PGE can give us that information in response to our more general requests. That, again, simplified the subpoena. We hope it will simplify the court's job. So those are the kinds of decisions that the commissioners and the city attorney's office made. As I said, it was not our intent to retreat from the city's request for fundamentally important information, but simply to narrow and focus the scope to eliminate questions of burden that we had not fully understood until I literally took the deposition of people last week.
Mayor, if I just say briefly in terms of the context on this, and again, it's a trial that begins next week and we have an executive session tomorrow, I would just simply state that I do not concur with much of anything that's in PG's letter. I'd prefer to elaborate on that tomorrow in terms of how they're characterizing what's gone on. As I've been tasked to keep track and to some extent lead us through this the last year and a half, I'm working from the fundamental position that the city council subpoenaed documents. Those documents were not provided, and we were sued. To my knowledge, the policy to subpoena those documents has not been pulled back. I haven't had any of my colleagues come to me and say that they've changed their mind, that they don't want to look at that information for the reasons outlined by our attorney. The trial's next week. The attorneys have advised us that, as Terry described, and I won't attempt to do it again, that PGE has taken a position that the subpoena is unreasonably burdensome, and this change simply tries to focus what we subpoenaed a year and a half ago to an even more clear
request so as to minimize the misinterpretation of what we're asking for. That's all that's there. There's not, to the extent that the council would like to, you know, which I would not necessarily recommend, change what we're doing, that's an entirely different matter and would need a bunch of debate. This is simply trying to get ready for a trial that happens next week to defend the city's subpoena power, which, as we have been sued to claim, does not exist. That's what's going on here. So I think to some extent there's a sense that maybe there's a change in policy or a change in the city council's position. If there were a change in the city council's position, that would be my job to work through with everybody. But this is essentially taking the same request that the council, I think unanimously, if I recall correctly, I'm not sure if Commissioner Saltzman was there or not, unanimously put in place a year and a half ago and actually making it much, much less burdensome. So, you know, we did brief the execs on that, exactly that path made as obviously you would, the attorney is available to everyone. But essentially, to me, I just want to kind of frame it that way because I think that's what's before the council is essentially authorizing Mr. Thatcher to focus the subpoena request on exactly what it is that we wanted, because I think it's been, I won't describe putting any adverbs on it, but I think it's been misunderstood, let's say, by PG, and I'd leave it at that.
Well, just from my perspective, it would have been a lot better if we could have had an executive session prior to this meeting so I would better understand the strategy, because I was not involved in any of the strategy or the drafting of the resolution. So that's why I'm asking the question.
But Mayor, we took a position on this as a council, and we're not changing our position. If anything, we're restricting beyond what the council authorized, what information that we're requesting. So, I mean, I would, you know, and that's assuming not all of us were involved, but I would tell you that our staffs, maybe they haven't kept us all informed, but I will tell you that our staffs have been involved, and the staff has known and had this as a subject of conversation for at least a week that I'm aware of. And
Well, I would regret that, Mayor, and we are having one tomorrow. The trial starts next Wednesday. There are possible ways for the council to amend this action if we chose to. I would strongly not recommend that. Had your staff, who was at the briefing last Tuesday, asked for an executive session, one would have happened. I did not see this as a major change in policy, therefore did not request an executive session. Did brief the relevant staff and did not find any cause to file an executive session, but we will have one tomorrow and we'll be able to walk through all the details, and that would allow room to modify if the argument and the majority chose to do so.
Further questions for Terry? Thank you.
Thank you, Liam.
We have
also point out, if this resolution did not pass, we would continue the subpoena, all the documents that we have today, because that is the council policy that's been passed by a dual vote, by a vote of the council. We would not, we would go into litigation did we not make a change with the request that's in hand. And I actually could live with that.
Any other discussion? Do we have anybody signed to testify?
No one signed up.
Call the vote.
Adams?
Well, I just want to make it really clear for the record that I am very pleased with what I've seen thus far of the newly independent PGE. But the focus of this subpoena is when PGE was not independent and was under the thumb of Enron or the Creditors Committee. But even if you disagree with me and others on this council, that we should not be advocates for our ratepayers with our franchised utilities in the city of Portland, I think that many Portlanders who even might disagree with this individual action should agree that we need to preserve our ability to subpoena these kinds of utilities and businesses that are given exclusive right to operate within the city's boundaries and beyond. So I support this. I appreciate the continuing leadership on this issue of Commissioners Stinn and Leonard, and appreciate, Terry, your work, and Catherine, your good work as well on this issue. And I vote aye.
Leonard?
Well, I really wished I could agree with Commissioner Adams that I'm pleased with PGE's public leadership since its separation from Enron, but given its activities in the recent rate hearing case and the findings of the staff and the commission, I might add, post-Enron, my confidence isn't there yet with PGE. So I'm hoping that that comes at some point in the future, but to date it has not. Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Stinn?
Aye.
Potter?
Well, I think that it was the unanimous decision of the council that we had the authority to subpoena the records. This appears to be narrowing that request to make it less onerous on the behalf of PGE. And I think that Commissioner Adams is correct in that this isn't about the current state of PGE operations, but what occurred under the ownership of Enron. And as then, as I feel now, is that we do have that right to subpoena, and that I will have to wait until tomorrow to find out exactly what all the strategy is, but it appears to be headed in the right direction, and I support it. Aye. Okay, we'll go back to the 10:15 time certain.
Agenda item 299, confirm appointment of Mark Edlin and Ted Savinar and reappointment of Ernie Block and Carol Morse to the Regional Arts and Culture Council, terms to expire June 30, 2008.
Commissioner Adams.
Thank you, Mayor. It's indeed my pleasure today to offer as two new appointees and two reappointments to the Regional Arts and Cultural Commission's Board. And I'll quickly go through their bios, and then we have an opportunity to hear a few words from Eloise Damrosch, Executive Director, and from Ted and Ernie. Two new appointments, Mark Edlin. Mark C. Edlin is widely recognized for his expertise in mixed-use development and the real estate industry, and he and his team have acquired a national reputation for its ability to conceive and execute mixed-use projects, projects that lead the way in the industry in terms of including art and cultural aspects as just part of what they do and not having to be forced, not having to be regulated into doing that, but they do it out of the love for arts and culture. Tad Savinar is a renowned Portland artist with a national reputation. He has received several National Endowment for the Arts individual fellowships, and his collections are included in the Portland Art Museum, the Smithsonian Institute National Archives, and the Museum of Modern Art in New York. And right now, he's playing a very big part in making sure that the streetscape and the livability of our renewing transit mall is everything that we want it to be. Ernie brings two decades of experience in his consulting work, including 13 years as executive director of the Pacific Core Foundation for Learning. He has been an active supporter and board member of numerous nonprofit organizations, including RAC, but also the Providence Medical System Campaign Strategy and Oversight. And he's a constant source of inspiration and advice to me on issues related to arts and culture. I appreciate that. And Carol Morse, who could not be with us here today, is being reappointed. She manages the charitable contributions and in community involvement for Portland General Electric, and she's president of the company's Corporation Foundation. She's also president of the board of the Northwest Business for Culture and the Arts and co-chair of Employers for Education Excellence and serves on Mayor Potter's Vision Committee. Quick overview of who we're appointing and reappointing. Eloise, would you like to say anything?
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm very pleased to be here with these wonderful board members. We've been very diligent in the last 5 or so years to really delve into the community and find people for our board that can really represent many points of view and also take the work of RAC out into the community and advise us how best to achieve all of that. And I'm very pleased that we now, and these four board members certainly represent leadership in the business community, the philanthropic community, and the artistic community. And I think they represent a great cross-section of what we're trying to achieve with the RAC board. So